Radio Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. Thank you so much for being here with us this evening. I'm your host, Jason Dole. But not for long. I'm about to hand things over to Bill Williams, because it's time once again for the Kingfisher Project, Information Against Addiction, only here on Radio Catskill's local edition.
Welcome to the Kingfisher Project, information and awareness about the heroin and opiate epidemic. I'm Julie Pizzol. The Kingfisher Project began in memory of my daughter, Rebecca Jean Pizzol, who was shot and killed due to her heroin addiction. At her memorial service, her former teacher, Mr. Okazalik, read an essay she wrote. It was about a bird, an injured kingfisher bird that she found and rescued when everyone else had given up on the bird. In that spirit, our community came together and formed the Kingfisher Project. Since 2014, we have been raising awareness about the drug and opiate crisis in our listening area and around the country, right here on Radio Catskill. Here is Bill Williams.
Community in Crisis is an organization in the Somerset Hills of New Jersey with a mission to combat substance use disorder through youth and family education and recovery support, building a healthier, more connected community. We are joined this evening by Jody D'Agostini, a founder and current board chair, and Andy Williams, the executive director. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you for having
Thanks, Bill.
And lest there be any confusion, though we share a last name, Andy and I are not related. I don't know if that's under full disclosure or what that comes under, but there we are.
We do share the same wicked sense of humor, though, I think, Bill.
Yeah, but we have to be careful about exercising that on this show, if it's all right with you.
Thank you for the reminder.
The story, the start of the community in crisis goes back to four volunteers sitting around a kitchen table, I guess. I believe, Jody, at your house.
Yes.
Can you, let's give everybody, give my audience a little history. For starters, maybe let's tell them where the Somerset, I say the Somerset Hills, tell them what communities, where you're located to begin with.
Yeah, it was in five towns in the Somerset County that we really encompass: Bernardsville, Basking Ridge, Peapack, Gladstone, Bedminster, Far Hills. And it got started because in December of 2013, my youngest daughter, who was a nursing student at college, called me hysterical, basically, from school because she had lost two friends to overdoses 2 days apart, one on a Wednesday and one on a Friday, and called me, couldn't breathe. You just knew something had terribly wrong had happened. And I had to talk with her for a couple hours, really, to understand this. I didn't really know the scope of what the problem was back then. We did not know it was opioids back then. We just knew that we were losing children to overdose deaths, and there were a lot of children in and out of rehab. Again, a lot of shame around it at the time, a lot, no understanding of what was going on. We really didn't understand that it was pills to heroin. It seemed to be the route back then. And so through her tears, one of the last things she said to me was, how many more are we going to lose before someone does something about it? Which resonated with me, a very spiritual person. So I was praying on it all night long because I couldn't sleep. I think I had a school of 2000. We lost two friends in the whole time that I was in high school, one from a car accident and one from lightning. And to think of two children lost within 2 days that were young, I just said something is terribly wrong. Statistically, I started putting things together about the magnitude of people that had been lost and or in and out of rehab. And I was the chair of the board of the Somerset Hills Y, which is a really large Y system in our area. I called the director of the Y the next morning and I said, I think we need to do something. Can you get me some people, volunteers, to start studying this? Because I'm a science major. I don't want to be reactive. I want to study it, do something more evidence-based. So we got a pool of people together and we started looking at it, like what's going on in our community. At that point, we thought it was localized, but we didn't realize it was national. And that's how we started. We just had a real committed group of people that felt the same way and started getting feeling that this was something a little bit more than anybody had recognized. And we started looking at what was out there to try to build a model that we could, in our community, combat what we learned to be the opioid epidemic.
Now, at some point, I connected with your group because I grew up in Bernardsville.
Yes.
And I happened to be in Bernardsville. My mother had died and we were selling her house. And I picked up a copy of the Bernardsville News.
Yes.
And there was some indication that kids had, they had died. But it, the way it was presented was a bit mysterious. And actually, in terms of stigma, it really speaks, in hindsight, speaks to the stigma around the disease. It may have talked of overdoses. It didn't really discuss fatalities.
Right.
And I wrote a letter to the editor.
Yes.
Saying, essentially, I was saying, let's get real. I lost my son. There are others. You want to know, you really want to know about this if you want to do something. He got in touch with me. They wound up sending a reporter. The reporter did a whole interview on our family story. And then there was an editorial as well.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what you read.
And then I reached out to you and wanted to get you involved because we were doing a series of town halls. We were trying to educate ourselves on what was going on. So we knew that you'd be a great resource. You had lived experience, if you will. And you seemed to understand what was going on when nobody, you got to go back 10, 11 years. People didn't understand what was going on, and you did. So it was nice to have you help us along our journey.
Now, Andy, when did you fit into the picture? Were you working at the Somerset Hills Y at the time?
I was dragged in, kicking and screaming, Bill.
So were you one of the four at the kitchen table?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Jody, the story was so compelling. We all felt very passionate. And a lot of people ask me anyway, and I'm sure Jody and others, what's your personal connection to this? Why did you get involved? Because we were all volunteers for a number of years. And I fortunately haven't had any family personal crisis in this area, but I had three teenage kids at the time. They're in their 20s now. And it was just one of those there, but for the grace of God, go I, knowing that it could happen to anyone and everyone, as we well know now more than we did then. I jumped in with both feet. Jody's leadership is inspiring. And I knew that whatever we did would gain momentum with Jody's passion and connections and so on behind it. So that's really my story about how it began. And then having worked as a volunteer for a number of years, nights and weekends, we were meeting frequently. I then, when we eventually got enough funding, I was able to move over and start actually working at CIC and left the Y system. Yeah.
How did you, give us a little more history after those, after four people, and Jody, you started to tell us, after four people, you wound up having some town-wide presentations.
Yes, we did. So it was fortuitous at the time that Chris Christie was our governor, had lost one of his best friends, a pretty compelling Facebook interview if you ever have time to look at it. He talked about losing his big fall from grace from a elite Ivy League institution at one of his best friends, went to law school, practicing in the city, and basically died of an overdose with a needle in his arm at a hotel in Route 22 in New Jersey. And lost his family, lost his job, and of course ended up losing his life. And so that he created through the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Tobacco, he commissioned them to study what was going on. They put out an 88-page report, which was all evidence-based. We grabbed that report, we digested it as a group, and we created seven different working groups to really combat it at the local level in every area, hitting it hard because we said, hey, listen, time's of the essence. We can't lose anymore. We don't want kids to start going down and getting addicted. We don't want them to die. So we felt that we had to really get on it as quickly as possible. And so we involved pretty much the entire community, from the schools to the Y, the Visiting Nurse Association, the hospitals, you name it. We hit the medical professionals, the police. We got everybody involved in a big way, even realtors, because drug seekers were going on open houses and grabbing, you know, stock medicine cabinets. So we really hit it hard. And we then actually presented twice at the Governor's Council down in Trenton. Andy and I were there. And it was pretty amazing because after we presented, they came and were embracing us. They were like, we had enough money to do the report. We had no money to actually fulfill anything in here. So isn't that the government's way? It's okay. We funded a little bit, but we didn't get it to the finish line. They wanted it to be happen at the community level, grassroots, if you will. So they were really embracing us. And we did help a lot of communities because we created a lot of marketing materials and resource materials and really a way to get about this and then shared it with communities, said, we've got to do this. Once we realized it wasn't just our community, it was nationwide. let's get on this and let's get on it as hard as we can. So we were very much of an open book, trying to involve as many communities as possible to get this reach out there.
How did you, other than the 7 working groups, how did you go about educating yourselves personally? There's so much to learn.
We were talking.
There's still so much to learn.
We met with a lot of professionals in addiction, physicians that were working in this area. So we definitely did a more scientific deep dive on it. And then we read a lot. And our group was pretty eclectic, if you will. So we had all different walks of life, including physicians and pharmacists and people. So we had the right people in the room, if you will. And then, of course, then they were interviewing people. We'd get back together. This is why when we were meeting. And then we had this 88-page document. And we put it all together, and then we created these groups with like action items and things that everybody had to do right away to get this going. Go ahead.
Really, the Governor Christie's report, the 88-page report, was really our blueprint, Bill. And much of it was geared to grassroots work, local communities trying to solve local problems. Much of the initiatives that we embraced and rolled out were no to low cost. So it was easy for volunteers and various stakeholders in our community to be able to pick it up and run with it and deliver it, because it literally was meetings, town halls, posters, tabling events. It was very low cost or no cost initiatives. So, and you, rather than be completely overwhelmed by the enormity of the task at hand, which we could easily have been with these 7 different working groups, it was like water dripping on a stone. And gradually you started seeing a shift in education, awareness about it as a disease, and people reaching out and being more vulnerable about their own struggles and so on. So it definitely was a sort of sea change that took a while to take hold, but which was this multifaceted movement, wasn't it, Jody?
Yes. And we started, Bill, just in prevention and education. That was our thing. Let's get out there and get out there fast. We wanted, again, less people going down the funnel, because we knew once they got addicted, it was much really difficult to get them off. And we were worried about all these young deaths that were going on. But then we branched off into another area, because all we want to do is see what are the unmet needs in our community. And then we started again reading all the research saying that there's a 90% relapse rate. They would go to get treatment, maybe go away 1-3 months or whatever, come back and immediately relapse 90% or better. And so we said, wow, we're missing something here. They need to have some supportive community of connection back when they get back to the community. So they're not going back with the group of people that were using substances at that point. You know, they don't want to live in their parents' basement forever. So we wanted to give them some tools, resources, and a community, basically, that supported them. And that's when we created that other part, another pillar of our work. And that was the sobriety support initiative. Like, how do we keep these people and support these people through groups, activities, programs, and then the community itself to keep people from using again?
One thing, you mentioned the 7 working groups, and when I look at, rereading some of your literature recently, it seems to me one thing that you've done very well is to avoid having silos, that you're a very homogenous sort of group, that the police are talking to us, or whoever should be, that all the various, you've managed to bring, I was struck by this. I was at an event of yours the other night. And 2 words, I know you're community in crisis, but the 2 words that came up to me was the community in connection and community in conversation.
Yes.
The CIC stands for far more than crisis now.
Oh, yeah. We've rebranded actually to CIC because we figure crisis is, even though it is still a crisis, we just didn't think a crisis can go on for 11 years. We wanted to actually have something a little more positive. So for grant purposes, we're still community in crisis, but otherwise we rebranded to CIC, and community and connection is a large piece of what we're doing right now in that prevention side.
And altered your logo a little bit too.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually, I'm very proud of the fact that we brought all stakeholders into the room. We'd meet monthly. We were really a dedicated, amazing group. Volunteers. The police were coming to the meetings from like the towns. We got the police chiefs involved. They were helping us with the town hall. Chief in Bernardsville at the time actually created a trifold so that when he would go out, if somebody, they had to revive him with Narcan, they created a tri-fold to give to them. And he said, you've changed our complete view on this. They had obviously these are addicts or whatever out there, into more compassionate way of looking at it and said, maybe we can help them. So we completely had a mind change of even the police in our towns, and they were extremely supportive. So it was really good. And they would come to the meetings.
She said the Bernardsville police chief, but stop me if I'm wrong. I think it was Brian Bobowitz, who was the Basking Ridge police chief.
Yeah, it was Brian Bobowitz with the Bernards Township Police Department. So it was Brian, and fully admitted that he used to think quite badly of people who were struggling with substance use, and that we had changed his view of these people. And then he took it upon himself to then make sure that his detectives were trained and understood that the substance use disorder was a treatable chronic disease and not a poor personal choice. And I saw him not that long ago, and he's still surprised at how he changed his mind about this. There were a lot of naysayers, Bill, back in 2014. So many people said, it's not happening. What are you talking about? It was not front page news. It was not a white suburban problem. It belonged in the streets of Newark and Paterson. It's not in my backyard mentality. And of course, that changed. And now there's no denying it's people completely embrace the fact that it's in our midst. It's our neighbor. It's in our families. It's in our friends.
You're listening to the Kingfisher Project on the Local Edition. I'm Bill Williams. After the break, more with my guests, Jody D'Agostini and Andy Williams. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
The Democratic Party has basically identified itself as the party of the working class. And at the same time, the party has banked on a more diverse America was going to be a more democratic America. And both of those things are no longer necessarily true.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character, on air now for 10 years. Join us Saturdays at 10:30 for stories from fascinating characters of the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania, right here on Radio Catskill.
Hi, I'm co-star Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music, right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me, The Music Emporium. Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to the Kingfisher Project on the Local Edition. I'm your host, Bill Williams. And I'm talking with Jody D'Agostini and Andy Williams of Community in Crisis. You mentioned the governor's report, but if you were creating a template for another community, starting mm-hmm. from scratch, what recommendations might you have?
I could start that. I think it's not so much the content, but the drive, the motivation, the commitment, the dedication, the passion. We do talk to other communities, and we do have toolkits that they can review, and like a menu they can pick and choose from and then implement in their own communities. But really, none of that's really going to stick unless you've got a Jody D'Agostini or an Andy Williams who are passionate about the cause, who really, when you see a life saved, we just saved one last week. We saved a young man. We used Narcan. We've got him into treatment. And we saved his life. And he's a young man with so much of a future, a well-to-do family and so on. And when you see that, when you witness that, it is such a motivating factor that you can, one life's enough, sure, but we can do so many more, help so many more lives. And so if a community doesn't have that kind of awareness or commitment, I'm not sure it's going to really work. So if I'm going to build a template for a community, I want to first look at the leadership. I want to look at who's behind it, what their motivation is, and whether they're in it to win it, really.
certainly the one thing I hear you, and I couldn't agree more, because over the course of time, my son William died in at the very tail end of 2012. And I have branched out. I have met any number of people. I've come across, I've written, and people have written stuff. I've had the radio show. So it's a network that's grown around of connections. And anytime I see anything that's really successful, there is a strong individual, as you say, that's at the core of it, that's starting it. And often, more often than not, as a matter of fact, it's mothers, wives, women. It's the women that are leading these organizations. The men are helping out, but I've written a piece about, guys, we got to man up and get to do our share too.
I look at it as, I know my big motivator is, because I didn't have it directly in my family, but I've one-offs all over the place. I didn't want to lose any more of our children. I was like, as a mom, maybe that's part of that. Maybe that's the thread, Bill. I don't know. It's as a mother, you have this protective maternal thing. I was looking at this going, this is a young life that never really got fulfilled. You know, it was cut way too short. And I just thought that many of these people had funerals where no one came. There was no obituary in the paper. I always harken back to my brother that died at 25 from cancer. We had the support of, I bet you 1,500 people came to his wake. We had casseroles. We had people coming by, and we had all that support to help lift us up in a really difficult time. And now I look at these where we were trying to find the kids that died. Like it was quiet. No one knew what they died from. There was no funeral. There was nothing. And I thought, how can this be? This is a young life. Let's respect that and realize that this is something, a child that never got to full maturity even. And that was what was upsetting and troubling me. I can't even reckon with the fact that we are losing all these young people. And maybe many of them at the beginning were coming. One of them, again, got it from a sports injury, one of the initial young men that died. And then he was pills to heroin. So it wasn't even a choice he made. It was something that he got addicted from these pills. And then, of course, as we know, it was pills to heroin being a lot more accessible and much cheaper. And he wasn't alone. There were so many individuals when we started peeling it back, and I started realizing that this, again, it was the same story repeated again and again. And then again, the families, they started talking with me, they started talking with Andy, but they had no one to even speak to. So one of the biggest things we did to start with was a family support group. We got a licensed clinical therapist who was trained in addiction to host them and bring these families together and say, what are the resources out there? And let's grieve together, whether the child was still struggling or had passed away. But we wanted to make sure that they had some support with the challenges that they were facing. And they had no one to talk to. They didn't even want to tell their friends what was going on with their own children. We have trouble with our children. We get with our girlfriends and we talk away and we problem solve together. These people didn't have anybody. They were really on their own. And I think it was a commitment on all of our parts to make sure that we gave them whatever resources. So we were all ears, what's needed out there. And we're continuing to do that. We're trying to be as nimble as can be. Right now, we've done things to try to purge them so that they can get jobs. Because again, if you've got something like that, even a misdemeanor on your job resume, you might not get a job. If we can get that wiped, which we've been doing for people, then they can get and re-enter the job market and have some hope for their future. We're just doing this whole recovery-friendly workplace to try to get businesses to understand that amongst you are people that are dealing with addiction. Give them the support that they might need to get, just like any disease. You need that supportive community to be able to get you there so that they don't eventually lose their job due to this, whatever they're using, whether it's drugs or alcohol.
We have a robust recovery support team, and they are all individuals with lived experience. And so they do an awful lot of peer-to-peer work. And when people come to tour our location and they meet one of our staff, and that person might be a young, bubbly, full of life, full of laughter, hardworking, and so on. And then you're to say to that person who's visiting, 6 months ago, this person was on their knees. Their family had disowned them. They were unhoused. They didn't know where their next meal was coming from. And now they're working with us. They have hope. They have purpose. And every single one of them individually and without having heard it from each other call us their second family, because that's what you become. And when you see these individuals that whose lives are changed because of employment, it's just a wonderful thing. So I know it's always been one of Jody's priorities is to give, if you give people employment and purpose and hope, that's a huge game changer in their sustained recovery. So I love seeing it in action every single day with my team.
Is there anything I've left out? Your chance to self-promote any heroes, any people on a national scale, or any people that have influenced either of you particularly?
Chris Herron helped us a lot at the beginning. I don't know, he's got that 30 on 30. Sponsored him twice locally. He was extremely impactful. And the value that he brought to the youth, oh my gosh, you could have heard a pin drop when he spoke in that auditorium. That changed lives right there in front of it. Those kids were like locked in. His fall from grace, from being an NBA star to like literally living off the streets with a needle in his arm. You can't get it, you get anything worse than what he lived and how he changed his life around and then gave hope to people that have had this to maybe reverse course and make different choices going forward. He was really good. I think we have a lot more work to do. We're not even close to tackling this issue. And that's why I hope the resources don't go away or dry up, because youth will always be drawn to something that is risk-taking behavior. It's just those individuals are going to be there. And we can't afford, because the drugs are too dangerous right now, that we can't afford to continue to lose them. So we have to continue to educate on the risks and let them know that there are resources like we are. If you do, unfortunately, if you have become addicted to something, whether it's drugs or alcohol, that there are resources out there to help you find the path back.
You'll remember, Jody, at a town hall we held back in the early days, there was a gentleman who'd lost his son called Mr. Bill Williams.
Yeah.
Was the most eloquent,
yes,
and memorable presentation. When you get somebody who has tragically that experience, that lived experience as a family member, I think nothing hits harder to another parent when they can see someone like you, Bill. Your crusade to honor William and try and get the word out is just monumental. And you're a huge part of are getting on our feet at the beginning. So thank you for that.
No, you're going to make an old man weep on the air.
Yeah. No. You both did us big time. Thank you for what you're doing, Bill. Keep it up.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll close. The words that I've heard over and over are team, communication, and community, and connection.
Perfect.
Yep. Connection's the cure.
There we are. Yep. Okay. That's all the time we have for the Kingfisher Project. My guests have been Jody D'Agostini, Board Chair, and Andy Williams, Executive Director of Community in Crisis. Thank you both for your time this evening and for all you've done for your community and beyond.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much.
I'm Bill Williams. Thank you so much for listening tonight. There's more to my interview with Jody D'Agostini and Andy Williams. Hear our full conversation on the Kingfisher Project podcast at wjffradio.org. You can also find past interviews with great guests, authors, advocates, policymakers, physicians, and those in recovery, all up now at wjffradio.org. And be sure to join me right here next month for a new edition of the Kingfisher Project, Information Against Addiction, right here on the local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
Big thanks to Bill Williams for doing the Kingfisher Project. Thank you for listening. Do keep on listening on air, always live streaming at wjffradio.org, which is where you can go to hear the rest of that conversation on the Kingfisher Podcast. This has been the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back tomorrow evening to do it all over again. Coming up at 7, we've got Music Emporium with Mr. Kusar Grace. But first, it's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new releases, film festivals, nostalgic screenings, live music events, and more. Information and schedule at thecalicoontheater.com.
I'm Thane Peterson. Join me for great music from the newest artists with a little bit of classic jazz from the greats of the past thrown into the mix. Living Jazz, Saturday at noon, only on Radio Catskill.
Hey, this is Matt Hurtado. Join me for Virtual Soundscapes, your gateway to the best music in gaming. Classic tracks from the 8-bit era, modern releases, and interviews with the minds behind the games. Thursday night at 10 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.